This is Hidden Tillers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
Let's talk about what justice actually looks like in this case. Three kids are dead. Cora was 5. Dawson was 3. Callan was 8 months. Whatever this jury comes back with, none of that changes. So the only question left is what we actually want a courtroom to do about it. So the big question is, what exactly does justice look like? And are we going to get to justice, you know, quote unquote? It's another bumper sticker type phrase that people like to throw around when you want things to go in one direction or the next. One of the things that struck me here in this is the judge said, you know what, we're not going to let these women who the defense had found, who've been through postpartum psychosis, testify about it, to give their experience, to help the jury understand what it's like from a first-person perspective to be living through such an experience and remarkably survive it as well. There are expert witnesses the judge is allowing to come on, doctors, to explain it, but the women who've lived it, the judge said, no, the jury can't hear from you. Can we get to justice, quote unquote, if the courtroom is actively prohibiting the jury from getting the context of the very problems they're trying to litigate?
Allie and I had an amazing conversation about this, like in that ruling.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the end of the day, like, I understand and agree with what Kevin was saying, Kevin, her attorney, you know, because, and I put it this way to Allie, if you're a juror, what is going to be the most instructive, helpful thing for you as a juror to hear about the realities from people that have actually lived it in comparison to an expert that has probably never experienced it firsthand and is just talking about it? There's a certain weight that can only come from those that have lived it, that an expert will never be able to fill that gap. That's where I worry about in the case, because it would have a huge impact if they could parade 30 people into that courtroom and say, I lived this. This is what my experience was. And having the jurors hear it firsthand from people that have no reason to come into that courtroom and lie, they'd be forced to deal with the reality that this does exist in the world, and this is what it can look like, and this is what it can result in. That being said, the counter argument ultimately is that if we allowed that to happen, that it would ultimately end up in being 30 mini trials. Like every single person that would come into that courtroom, oh, well, so you were psychotic, but you didn't kill your kids, did you? Oh, you got in a car and drove, you know, it was the argument that was being made in the courtroom. And it's the correct argument, because it could work against Lindsay. We say, okay, well, look, this person went psychotic and she handcuffs herself to the bed. That's what she did. She didn't kill her. You know what I'm saying? And like, so when you're talking about, again, every story is its own case.
Yeah.
Every individual is their own person. No two people are the same. Where I feel that the weight of that would be incredibly powerful, I worry about the other side of it.
There's another side to that coin, and I think that you spelled it out very, very eloquently there on what that means. Because true, I mean, if they were to allow that, I mean, as much as I completely agree, I think they'd be incredibly powerful.
Yeah.
But would it be prejudicial somewhat? I mean, then could the prosecution then parade in 15 other women who've gone through this, who are not remotely sad about it or remorseful, and you could have a parade of people that, oh my God, look at these monstrous people who've come in here who are psychotic, and they're like, yeah, I'm glad the kids are gone, you know, in their own story. I mean, probably hard to find that, but you could flip the coin and flip it the other way of, yes, these ones survived it this way, these ones have a very different outlook on it, and these are all individual cases that are not this specific case. So I hear you there.
Yeah.
But what good, I guess, the biggest question, what good, and this is like the biggest question I have for the state, the DA, what good comes from putting a disabled woman, a physically disabled woman, a woman who has suffered from this mental disability now, in prison forever, who will forever hold the grief of what this mental illness did to her and her children those years ago? I fail to see how that is justice in this case for those children.
I mean, Todd just threw up a comment. I don't know whether it was accidental or if he meant to, but it was Angie9267 said guilty, but insane, in my opinion, allegedly. Yeah. But she did strangle her three young kids. That's where this case lies with people. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like people cannot put the act aside. Yeah. People just live in the act being the fact that she unalived her three kids. Like that act for some people, and I am no one to judge. Everyone is allowed their opinion on this case. It is a very, very difficult case. All I can ever ask is to have an open mind and listen to the evidence, because maybe, just maybe, you'll learn something that you didn't know.
Yeah.
In terms of mental illness. So, I mean, that's where it lives, man. It's an eye for an eye. Somebody has to pay for it. And unfortunately, they didn't charge the medical providers or the institutions that did it or Big Pharma, because they can't. Yeah. Even though the real responsibility, in my estimation, lies with those medical providers, with Big Pharma, because ultimately, man, it's inexcusable in terms of the deviation from the standard of care that took place with every single doctor that she saw, them not having any knowledge of what she was on prior to and just continuing to pile on is absurd.
Yeah. I mean, it is. I mean, it's if you were to go to a gas station and they were to you end up pumping Red Bull into your engine, and then your car obviously doesn't function correctly. It's 30% Red Bull and 70% gasoline. And everything goes to shit and your car fails and you're on the highway and you cause a big accident. They're not going to be looking necessarily at the driver of the vehicle or the vehicle. They're going to, who the fuck put Red Bull in the gas? Yeah. I mean, that would be the problem. That, like, who decided this was a good idea? And then you go to the next one and they're doing Monster Energy in their gasoline and cars are crashing. I mean, these sort of things would be looked at the source, but we live in a country where these sort of institutions, if you will, are so legally protected from prosecution that when the villagers have their pitchforks and their flames, they want blood. They want somebody. And since they are so protected, well, looks like Lindsay's the one that they're going to be going after. If those weren't so protected in the way that they are from prosecution criminally, do you think she'd even be on trial? Do you think there'd be this much vitriol against the woman if simply on a public stage, a public forum, a courtroom, those entities could face true charges for their incompetence? Would the public be feeling this? Is this more? The public wants their villain, and that is the true villain. But since we can't go after them, they're going after her instead.
Well, we can, but it's civilly, and it doesn't have the same impact.
Yeah. No,
that's just money. And big pharmaceutical companies don't give a fuck if they have to pay out, $300 million.
Yeah, it's baked in already. Yeah.
It's baked into their, it's one of the hazards of their trade. So, like, as far as that goes, man, yes. Do I think that there would be a positive impact on holding them responsible criminally? Absolutely. You know, but like the big question is, how do you do it? Who's the person responsible? Are you putting Big Pharma? I mean, it's like, go watch the second or third season, or maybe it was the first season of Goliath, which was fucking great.
Yes,
right? Like,
yes,
and you know, I mean, and that like really went to the heart of it. And, you know, like Dope Sick, like there's, it's out there for people if they're willing to kind of dig into what Big Pharma is doing to all of us. Mm-hmm. And somebody had asked a great question. Allie had said, and I wanted to address it. It was up a little. So Allie Foley had said, Bob, do you think that there's a big problem with people thinking these meds are an instant fix when they aren't? Yes.
Yeah.
But of course, look, the pharmaceutical trade in terms of, like, I don't know if you remember, Tony, back in like when I was getting out of law school, pharmaceutical reps, they would always hire beautiful young women to go like to go into doctors' offices and push their shit. And they'd say, and you know, so when doctors are when they're prescribing something to people, that is something that Big Pharma has come in and sold them to say, okay, look, you know, I know these other companies have this shit, but our shit's the good shit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've got somebody to sell it to you. This is what we want you to push. And those doctors aren't digging into the FDA shit. They're not looking at what the black box warnings are. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, I've never had a doctor prescribe something wherein they go into a laundry list of the, you know, the negative impact that the drug can have on you. Right. So it's like, you know, doctors will hand you a brochure. Yeah. Read up on it. You know,
isn't that your job?
Yeah, thanks,
as a doctor.
Yeah. So, I mean, absolutely. I think that's a huge issue. You know, and the other part of it is that there is medication out there that helps with bipolar and, you know, manic depressive type stuff is, I think, can be handled through pharmaceuticals. But, you know, the problem with a lot of these drugs that are kind of driving at some of the more intense mental health diseases and that are effective is that when the people take them for an extended period of time and they work, mm-hmm. they then think they've become cured.
Yeah.
So inevitably what they end up doing is they don't like the way that it makes them feel.
Yeah.
Like globally, totally. There's something that makes them feel not normal, but even though they're not having the delusions and the things that they were dealing with, you know, and so what they do is they get off their meds and they'll do it secretively. They won't tell their family members that they're off their meds. And then of course they slip right back into the illness. And it's like that vicious cycle because the drugs do impact you. They do make mm-hmm. you feel a certain way. And that way is not normal, but it's allowing your mind to operate in a way that you're able to function in society again, you know? So it's like, we know so little about the human mind, like in general, even the most brilliant doctors on the planet, like know very little, you know?
Well, something I was thinking of earlier in this case, you know, we look back in time, 100, 120 years ago, leeching would have been a common practice. I mean, it makes me wonder 100 years from now, how they're going to be looking back at our point in times and specifically our court system, as we were talking about earlier, how it barely recognizes mental health as being a core issue to half the things we talk about. If they're going to look back on that shit going, wow, they were really off base on how they
Stone Age shit, bro.
That's like some Stone Age shit that mental health wasn't part of the equation here. Holy shit, it's all of the equation. One more in Massachusetts.
Dude, I could talk about this for 8 hours.
I know, but we only got so much time.
I know.
In Massachusetts, a first degree conviction is life. There's no parole. The judge doesn't get a say. It's pretty black and white and how that gets doled out, which makes the decisions of a judge even more important as far as what he allows in or what he allows out in a case like this without prejudice. In your opinion, Bob, thus far in, and we've talked about some of the decisions that are made, how do you feel about the judge so far? Is this a fair judge that's handling this case?
I feel like he is. You know, he made a negative ruling for the defense yesterday regarding some late disclosed experts that they argued before they started picking the jury. And, you know, I think he's a thoughtful judge. I think he's a seasoned judge. I don't think this is his first rodeo. And I think that he's been pretty even handed, to be honest with you. I'm not getting any kind of like, this guy's a shitbag judge and he doesn't know what he's talking about. I felt quite the opposite. And I feel that he's he's pretty open with his decisions, and he's thoughtful, and I think he gives both sides grace to get their arguments out. So I have a lot of respect for him. In terms of the decision he made yesterday, I mean, he upheld, the motion by the state to exclude these witnesses that the defense disclosed late. But he said, look, you know, you've got your experts for the lack of criminal responsibility. They're set in stone, right? And that's where the heart of the case lives. Like, mm-hmm. if these doctors, one of them being La Posada, which all the people that are Reed people are going to like, oh, we love Dr. La Posada, and she's a fabulous witness. She truly is. But like, she was going to be getting into other things in terms of like, if the state is going to try to basically imply to the jury that Lindsay Clancy's fall from the window, which she became a paraplegic from, was all just window dressing. And then, she had like done it just to make it seem like, you know, and things went terribly wrong for her and she ended up breaking her back. You know, like if they were going to go that route, that they were going to bring La Posada on to try to counter that argument. So the judge was like, ultimately, where he granted the motion for the state, he did say, you know, look, after their opening and the state goes first, if it appears that that's the route they're going to take, I'm going to revisit it for you to the defense. And we'll have that discussion. If you think you're going to need to call them, then, you know, I'll revisit it. So to me, the guy's been even handed. And that's all you can ask for.
Yeah.
Like, I just want a judge that's going to follow the law, you know?
He ain't gull.
He ain't gull, bro.
He ain't no gull.
Yeah. Oh, boy, and I might have a gull story for you down in a couple weeks, buddy, that's going to blow your fucking mind.
Oh, I can hardly wait. All right. Well, then we'll wrap up our conversation here on that. We'll be covering this for the next several weeks. I know you guys are covering it over on Defense Diaries every single day as well. So be sure to go check out Defense Diaries. Press subscribe, YouTube, wherever you get podcasts to check out Bob and Allie's coverage over there. And
yes, Buried, my pride and joy podcast. I'd like Todd to come on as a independent listener of the podcast and tell the people what he thinks about Buried, because me talking about what a great podcast and Tony, who's my dear friend, doesn't carry as much weight because, you know, he's my guy. Todd, who's also my guy, but, you know, Todd independently came up to me, Buried, inside the John Wayne Gacy investigation. Todd was like, man, we were listening to it on the way to Tony's wedding. They had a long drive. And you made my heart beat in my chest. You made it just look like grow two sizes, because your rave reviews meant everything to me. So thank you for that, Todd.
Well, I went into it thinking it was just going to be, you know, 10, 11, 12 episodes. It was going to be the tapes and your take on it and all this. And then the doors got blown open. You blew the doors open on some stuff, Bob. And after every episode, me and the other people in the car driving down to the wedding just sat there with our mouths wide open. And we hated to stop and get gas because we had to stop the podcast in order to go do that. And we did have to take bathroom break. It's absolutely incredible. If you think you know this story, if you think there's nothing more out there on this story, it's going to blow your mind.
Thank you for that. Like, I mean, I couldn't say anything better than that. So thank you for that, Todd. I really appreciate that.
You got it. Good stuff.
Go check that out wherever you get podcasts. It is a great listen, especially if you're going like they were on a road trip coming to the wedding. Yeah. It's a great road trip listen, without a doubt. Yeah, so if you still got a summer road trip in store, be sure to check that out. All right. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you're listening to this show, and be sure to give us your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'll continue our conversations right there. Until next time, for Bob, for Todd, and for Robin, I'm Tony Brewski. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast.